SMS SAFM now on 41391. Songe Somapete on SAFM.
I have two colleagues on the line from Tralak. That's the brilliant, I don't know what to call it, but it really is the one and only organization on the continent that focuses, as it does, on issues to do with trade law at a continental level as well as at a global level, but certainly with a concentration on African trade. That's the Trade Law Center South Africa, based in Cape Town, initially in Stellenbosch, run by the venerated Gerard Erasmus, together with Trudy Hartzenberg. Now, two of my colleagues from there, Ms. Gita Briel, researcher at Tralak, as well as Ms. Maria Emmanuel, policy analyst based in Namibia, who both at some point would have worked at Tralak. Not so long ago, I took a week off to attend a conference in Kenya, and this is where I heard my colleagues speak on food security. So let's talk about the outlook for food security on the continent, the challenges of changing weather patterns and what that has to do and how it impacts on food security, more particularly climate change and droughts in particular regions in northeast Africa, as currently being experienced, and certainly parts of Central Africa, the intermittent and infrequent weather patterns as opposed to historical climatic patterns, and where South Africa especially features in all of this. Gita Briel, Ms. Maria Emmanuel, ladies, good evening. Thank you so much for joining me. Gita,
thank you so much for having me.
Yes, Gita is there, I heard, as I did Maria. Gita, first up, a bird's eye view from a lot of what you would have said, which I find quite fascinating for the listeners at home. We have about 15 to 18 minutes together, yeah, so we're going to try and divide the time equally, 9 minutes each. But just off the cuff, initial remarks about some of the things that your research has uncovered in relation to food security on the continent and especially for South Africa.
So thank you so much, Sangezo, and thank you for having us tonight. I think it's a particularly important time to be speaking about food security, and around the world, it's a really pertinent topic. I think a lot of global factors are coming together right now to make food insecurity a particularly difficult challenge. We know, of course, the war in Ukraine has caused a lot of trouble. There's been a lot of price shocks and kind of volatile commodity markets. There's been the issue of high energy prices, high fertilizer prices, trade disruptions, and all of these things have really come together to cause these steep food price increases, which have been experienced particularly intensely throughout Africa and in the sub-Saharan African region. And then we know that we're still recovering from the COVID-19 pandemic, and the aftermath of that and the effect on household incomes has then, you know, been another blow. And then in the background to all of this, always ongoing, is the climate change challenge, which I think is kind of easier to ignore and less spoken about than these dramatic global crises, because it's a slower onset issue. But it's really being seen increasingly as a crisis across Africa, and the impact that it's having on food production, on infrastructure, on trade, because of kind of all the channels through which it affects agriculture. And so we're seeing, you know, these intense droughts, these floods, rainfall variability, and then also, yeah, just more natural disasters, higher temperatures, and all of this comes together to really blow agricultural productivity and really make especially rural populations suffer. And so I think this is a global challenge, but it's particularly an African challenge because we are so vulnerable to the impacts of climate change. And that vulnerability is compounded by so many different factors, but I think kind of a few important ones, and the ones which relate to me and Maria's work particularly, is the idea that Africa is really dependent on imports for our food. And so I think, yeah, a statistic that's thrown around a lot is that 85% of Africa's food, so this was for 2016, 2018, comes from outside of Africa, and that import dependence is kind of much more severe than what you'd see in any other region in the world. And it means that when we see these global crises occurring, Africa is much more susceptible to what's happening in global markets than another region would be, because we're dependent on the global market for our food. And so, yeah, all of these factors puts Africa in a really vulnerable position and makes it increasingly urgent that we act and also kind of pull all the strings we can to get global support, because climate change particularly is the problem that is hurting us the most, but it is by no means Africa's fault, or let's call it a tiny, tiny contribution, but it's a problem that has been contributed mostly by high-income countries. And so it's really important that African countries rally together to try get support from the global community. And that's where forums like COP27, which has just come to a close on Friday, is important for kind of African governments to come together and have one voice in demanding help in adapting to the impacts of climate change, demanding more mitigation action. And so globally, there has to be this action, but then nationally, really, we need governments to be proactive on adaptation. We need them to invest in kind of more strategic plans, more resilient infrastructure. And particularly on like research and development is an interesting field in agricultural productivity.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that, Gita, because I think it speaks to the solutions that are yet available to houses like Trellak in partnership with private as well as public sector, insofar as it relates to now that we know what the challenges are, how can, through research and development, among other solutions, arrest this problem. But talking about the problem, which is in line with Maria's work, if I may bring my sister from Namibia in here, if we are talking about Africa being a net exporter of food to the tune of 85%, I mean importer of food, 85%, what that says is only 15% is generated from within. In other words, for South Africa, for Namibia, for the continent to eat, 85% of that meal has to be imported. Rather, that on its own is a recipe for disaster. And just that on its own, from a systemic perspective, this is why Africa remains very, very vulnerable. And very, very vulnerable does not begin to talk about the level of vulnerability, does it? Maria?
Yes, thank you very much, Sangezo. Happy to be here. And, well, you know, I was just, as you go through the question and I was making notes to, the first thing I was noting here is we look at it at the household level, first and foremost. So when we look at the landscape of Africa generally, of Namibia, of South Africa, and you look at production at household level, what is happening there? And I think when Gita was trying to conclude, trying to look at that angle of adaptation, innovation, so what can we do, right, to sort of decrease the dependency on food import? And as we see the situation, if the world market has turbulences, we are the most, affected, impacted. So household level right now is very much obviously impacted due to the climate change, but more so adaptation of that, where farmers are really, really struggling. And if we cannot produce for household level, we're already talking about the food insecurity, which is the hunger and the hunger of the stomach. And you go to the next level of market access. So we are also having a lot of wastage and also challenges to market access, especially for small-scale, smallholder farmers that are not yet perhaps also pulled into the food, the formal food system that would also count to the contribution of the national statistics that we speak of. So when you look at Africa, you know, when you look at our countries, we are agrarian-based countries. We are still at farm level. We are heavily dependent. In Namibia, we say agriculture is the backbone of the economy, and 70% of the population directly or indirectly depend on agriculture. And once agriculture is not working, then you can see it already on the impact at household level, as well as the contribution of productiveness into the national, food systems. Perhaps the other thing that we're not talking about is also the high unemployment between our countries on the continent, generally for the youth, as well as just if you look at Namibia and South Africa, both ranking very high, probably number one and two in the world of high unemployment. And what does that mean? When you look at productive citizens to contribute and to actually get the land productive. The other challenge really, again, the elephant in the room is the land challenge. Again, so many layers access to land, productive land, making the land that we have productive. But again, at the higher level, looking at how are governments resourcing and then bringing in this innovation for adaptation. So how serious are we to focus on the bigger goal? And as you rightly so said, if we are depending on world import and we are Africa and we have the largest land, unproductive or uncultivated land that could feed the world, what are we actually doing as governments? Where is our focus and why are we where we are? Looking at the fact that you have the climate change issue, which are issues that are probably at the higher phenomenal level, but have some form of initiatives on how to shift with that and how to get Africa back. And when I say that, if we go back to the years of Zimbabwe, the Great Rhodesias and the Zambia, when we go back to that history, as well, we are talking about a continent that was at once upon a time also greener than now. So looking at the historical shift that we are going through, looking at priorities of government and what we could do to probably narrow that gap much more aggressively, mm-hmm. I think those are some of the key things we need to be thinking about while, of course, facing the climate change challenge, which is facing the global globally.
Okay, we're certainly going to talk about responses to climate change. We're going to talk about the value of R&D after the ad break. My guest, for those who might have missed them, researcher at Trellick, Mosquita Briel, as well as a policy analyst in the Namibian government, Ms. Maria Emmanuel. We are talking about African food security questions in relation to some of the research that they have done, both with the South Africa focus, but as well as an Africa continental-wide focus. This comes on the backdrop of some of their thoughts presented at a continental level in Kenya very recently, last month, in fact, almost to the day, where I was quite moved to bring them onto this platform. Certainly do appreciate the indulgence. After the break, we continue with Gita and Maria.
SAFM, leading the conversation. Songe Somabhece on SAFM.
We are back. Gita and Maria are on the line. So here, so far, is what we know. 85% of the total food consumed on the continent is imported, with only 15% generated from within. We do certainly know that there are high levels of unemployment generally along the continent, as well as high levels of natural resource endowment. So that creates opportunity, as does the availability of arable land, as does the fact that a lot of Africa lies within the tropics, Tropic of Cancer, Tropic of Capricorn. More than not, favorable conditions, especially for agriculture. Forget the existence of the Sahara Desert only for a moment. But here we also have challenges, systemic challenges, in terms of how government policies, government resources, and how they are configured do not redound to the very basic level, frankly, of the household or a community that is directly associated to households, for the one reason and one reason only in the context of this conversation: food security. So how then, on top of all of this, does the impact of climate change create worse this statistic? And how are solutions, especially that of R&D, available yet to the African governments? I'm going to give an opportunity on climate change responses or issues to you, please, Maria, and the question of research and development, which will be the final contribution to you, Gita. We have literally 4 minutes, so at 2 minutes, Maria, I'm just going to have to move on with the contributions from Gita. Climate change impact, solutions around that, Maria.
Great. So the first one I'll go for is adaptation, the support for small-scale farmers to adapt to climate change as the weather pattern shifts, and also to mechanize agriculture. So this support is very important at a small scale, because we need to bring them into the formal economy so they can actually contribute. We can see that 15% increasing as we capture their participation. I'll end there.
Fantastic, short and sweet. Gita, research and development, what should be the research areas the continent should be focusing on for the nation's development?
Thank you so much, Sangezo. I think what's really important is building the kind of knowledge systems and skills that we need for understanding climate risk. And I think the huge weight of the research currently on climate risks are kind of developed in the global north. And I think understanding climate risks locally and how they should be adopted on the local level by farmers, and also what the most effective way is of conveying adaptation responses, because often we come up with this research, but it's not adapted or it's not adopted by farmers because the time hasn't been put into extension services and understanding how those kind of adaptation innovations can be spread. And I think also water management is kind of hugely undervalued in Africa, and most of our climate problems are either too much water, they're droughts, or sorry, they're floods, or they're too little water and they're droughts. And I think finding more sustainable ways to manage water, especially making use of this really rich base of indigenous knowledge that we have through practices like agroforestry, preserving our wetlands, those kind of practices can go a really long way in improving our access to water and de facto then improving our agricultural production. And I don't want to take up too much more time, but the final thing is trade. Intra-African trade has massive potential to improve. It's below 20% right now, and if we can improve our value chains, improve how we move food through the continent, then we can go a long way in weaning ourselves off our kind of dependence on countries from outside of Africa. And the AfCFTA, this kind of landmark agreement, will be instrumental in this if we can get it right.
If we can get it right, what would stand in its way of it not being getting it right?
I think that's
a big if.
Yeah, it's a big I think it's a whole other story, really.
Maria, you said we are getting it right. Why do you say that? That's an important point to make, a very encouraging one. What are we basing that statement on?
Because Africa can only make it if Africa trades with Africa. And that's because if you look at the current landscape in terms of trading with the first world, it's not in an inclusive strategy. And once we talk about inclusivity and diversity, we are able to capture the African market. And it's just easy. We know it because we are all African. We are not trying to tailor make too high costly products for a market we are not aware of. We know what Africa wants, and I think we can give what Africa needs. And once we focus on that, we'll see how the AfCFTA and African integration can work for the 21st century.
Lots to look forward to, clearly, and this conversation certainly can further be unpacked only with more time allowing. So please do expect further engagement on this. Ms. Geeta Brio, researcher at TRALAC in Cape Town, as well as Ms. Maria Emmanuel, policy analyst for the government of Namibia. Colleagues, thank you so much for your time.